Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Robin Hicks. Joining us today at the studios of CBS Interactive, Bob Googe, Managing Director of Starcom MediaVest.
Good morning, how are you?
And my co-host, Mumbrella producer, Brooke Hemphill.
Hello there.
This week, everybody's going legal, gardening leave and non-compete contracts.
Feeling peckish? How about a 1 kilogram burrito?
The royal wedding media frenzy takes its first casualty.
Is Channel 9 back in the game after AFP wins some viewers and Kerry Packer's cricket drama steps onto the pitch?
Fairfax makes headlines by merging its TV guides and finally caving in on autoplay.
Mumbrella's top 30 creative agencies, how we chose them and what comes next.
Bob, welcome back to the podcast. You've been a regular on the show.
So Indeed. First
of all, update us on what's the latest from Starcom.
What's the latest? Well, lots of good things happening at the moment as far as Starcom is concerned. First of all, it's very weird Tim not being here. I think you just said it's probably the first time ever he's been off sick. So he's been replaced by two people. So that says a lot about him, doesn't it? But Starcom's good. We've got, as I say, lots happening. It's the sort of a wartime of the year as well. So Cannes is happening. So we're putting a lot of entries together. And I guess, we're very lucky that we are one of the most awarded full-service media agencies in the country.
Oh,
we had big success at Cannes last year, so we're hoping to repeat that again this year.
Are you personally going to Cannes?
I won't be going to Cannes, no. Who'd want to go to Cannes this time of the year? I'm very happy to be here working hard back at the office. So we've got those sort of things happening. But look, never a dull moment in the world of media. So much, much happening. I will talk a bit later, if I can, about the Starcom speaker sessions, which will be happening next week as well.
So. Interesting. You mentioned awards. Obviously, usually that's an obsessive sort of realm of creative agency. So how seriously do you take awards at Starcom?
Yeah, no, look, we take it very seriously. I think the great thing about media awards is the fact that they are based on results. So everything we do has to be accountable. And as important as creative awards are, the great thing about media awards is, as I say, you have to have genuine results against them. And so it proves that the work you're doing is not only creative and good work, but it's actually resulting in results for your clients as well.
So what sort of campaigns are in the running for Starcom Australia?
We've got a number of awards. I mean, in the past, we've had been hugely successful with our Mars campaigns. So we won big last year for Mars. So we've got a couple of campaigns happening again for Mars Pedigree.
It's last year, it's a while ago now, but there's been a lot of success surrounding the Pedigree campaign.
Yes.
What's been the follow-up to that?
The truth is, as I say, the campaign was hugely successful as far as awards was concerned, but more importantly, it was hugely successful for the client. So this was the dog adoption campaign, where we had huge success in going out and actually saving dogs from dog compounds. And the result was that before we actually did this campaign, I think they saved something like less than 100 dogs. After the campaign, thousands were saved. Nice. So, it was a campaign which, we sit and talk in our industry that it's not about saving lives, but we can actually sit and say hands on heart that we did save lives and we made a difference.
Yes.
So hugely successful. It's been repeated. And I guess that's a great showing of a campaign that really truly does make a difference.
Okay. On Starcom's standing in general in Australia in the market, obviously you've got the RECMA rankings at the various tables. How do you feel that your rivals see you? I mean, I had a quick ring around before we came on air.
Did you?
And a few of them said that the positive's solid, but perhaps if there's a negative, unexciting.
Really?
They
should come down to
our office. What's your response to that?
Look, I think that's interesting. I guess people always have perceptions of what their so-called rivals are like. I think Starcom has always, been strategically strong. That's always been our background, I guess. And the fact that I mentioned that we're the most awarded full-service media agency, I think that's a demonstration of the sort of work we do. But I think, we're also extremely innovative. I think, Starcom has never been an agency that will go out and shout, to the world about what we're doing for the sake of going out and saying we're doing something. We like to demonstrate, I guess, our success through the work we do. Mm-hmm. And I think if you speak to our clients, they will tell you that they're more than happy with the sort of work we're doing. I think a great sort of record of that is that over 75% of our clients have been with us for over 7 years.
Wow.
Which, in this day and age, is a great result. Mm-hmm. And again, I think demonstrates the fact that what we do is effective. Mm. So we've got a great bunch of people. I think it's an exciting time to be doing what we're doing, and we're making a lot of changes as far as, you know, our culture and the sort of things we do. Mm-hmm. We encourage our staff to get involved and be involved in the decision making as far as the business is concerned. So, good.
What sort of changes, you mentioned culture, what sort of changes are being made at the moment? I mean, looking back through the archives, Starcom made a few hires with the word creative in the title. That's a while ago now. But how has that been developing, and where are you now? What sort of point are you at?
Well, I think the reality is that you have to sit back and say what was right, 6 months ago, 12 months ago. That's not the future. So we're always looking to say, where should we be in 5 years' time? So the reality is that we're more than just a media agency. We're a communications agency. And, I guess everyone talks about digital being the future. Well, digital is here already. So everything we do is digitally based. So every member of our staff is digitally trained. You talk about the creative appointments we've made. We've got a creative strategy director. And basically, all that's doing is evolving our business to look beyond just the traditional media space. I guess what we're doing is saying we're acknowledging the fact that our clients want different solutions. We're looking at where we should best be looking to replace staff and look at new positions, et cetera, which best suit the way the future of the industry is moving.
And so, in your recruitment strategy, I was just going to come on to that. So presumably your recruitment strategy has broadened, and you're looking outside media agencies and perhaps even outside creative agencies.
To be honest, we've been doing that for 3-4 years. I just think that the time is probably more right to do that than it's been in the past. We've brought people in with no media experience before. And the truth is, sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. And, at the end of the day, we are a media agency, so you still need to have a degree of knowledge about what's happening in the world of media. But the truth is, it's about ideas. And we want to bring people in who have the best ideas and who can actually look outside, so say, the traditional space and challenge us. I think the most exciting thing about Starcom at the moment is it's an environment where we want to have a debate internally about what we should be doing and encouraging people to have a say and sitting down and talking to our clients about what's important to their business. Yeah. So very much what we're doing now is, I talked before about, we've got clients who've been with us for a long time. We're going out and having conversations with those clients and saying, look, the relationship you had with us, up until now was one thing, but you should be looking at a different proposition as far as the relationship is concerned. So we're going out, we're being proactive with our clients and saying, tell us what you need. And it's about what's important to their business and coming up with genuine business solutions that are actually going to sort of benefit them as well. So that's the sort of people we're bringing in are people who can challenge not only ourselves, but our clients and the media as well.
Okay, looking to 2011, the general media outlook, how positive are you at the moment?
Still good. Look, I think our media futures, which we put out every year, was predicting 5 to 6% increase. No reason to believe that probably won't still be the case. I think there was a degree of, was a certain feeling that maybe April, May was a bit quieter than originally thought to be the case. But look, I think at the moment, all our clients are extremely positive. Of course, we're coming to see some sort of increase. But again, compared to markets like the UK, where they're now looking at going backwards again rather than forwards, we're still in quite a strong position. Mm-hmm. But taking into account all the things which have been happening around the world recently, you never know how that's going to impact.
Mm. The new business environment at the moment, are you happy with how sort of fluid it is? Mm. And also, what sort of agencies you fear at the moment the most in pitches? Mm.
Look, I think you've got to, it's not a question of fear. You respect anybody that you're up against. And the truth is, at the end of the day, we can all sit down and say we can do this and we can do that. It really comes down to individuals and how how you relate to clients and really truly understand what's important to particular clients. So I don't say we fear anybody, but we respect everybody as well. So,
okay. Can you tell us a bit about the speaker sessions?
I can. So we launched in November last year, I think it was, the Starcom speaker sessions, which was basically an opportunity for people in the industry to have their say. As I say, quite often you will get the heads of companies going out and having an opinion. What we wanted to do was to give the people who do the day-to-day work an opportunity to come and speak to leading industry heads and actually have a debate and have a discussion with them. So that was the idea behind the speaker session. Tim actually was the original spokesperson at our launch. and did a fantastic job. And we had over 100 people attend that, and we had 27,000 tweets or something ridiculous like that. So extremely successful. So our next one now is with DMG Radio, where we're going to be talking about the future of radio, because we talk about what's happening in the world of media at the moment. Well, there's an awful lot happening in radio at the moment, particularly in the Sydney market. So I think that's going to be really exciting, not only talking about the digital radio, but just generally what's happening. DMG, obviously, with Lachlan there now, and you know, various other changes. But in Sydney, you've got a lot of different on-air talent happening at the moment. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's going to be really exciting. So an opportunity for people from any level within the industry to come along. It's on the 4th of May. Opportunity for people to come along and basically question Kath O'Connor and Dave Borian from DMG to say, you know, what's going on in the world of radio.
How many people do you expect to attend, and what's the key thing you hope to get out of it?
Well, look, as I say, we've had over 100 people turn up to them in the past, which isn't bad for Tuesday night. In fact, it's very good. But the whole thing will also be on social media as well, so the opportunity to be involved. You don't actually have to be there. You can be involved either tweeting or Facebook as well. So look, we just want to have a debate. As I say, I think more and more it's given people the opportunity to have an opinion. And I think, you know, too often you will have the so-called leading lights of the industry come up and say, I think we should be doing this, I think we should be doing that. This is to say it's an opportunity for the people who are actually on the trading floor, if you like, doing the day-to-day work to sort of come and question people who they wouldn't normally have the opportunity to question. So, yeah, I think it's good to put something back into the industry in that way.
Next, everybody's going legal, gardening leave and non-compete contracts. In recent weeks, we've been following James Warburton's case against Channel 7 regarding his departure from the network. But this week, it's also been revealed that former Sunrise executive producer Adam Boland wants to be released from his two-day-a-week contract with 7. While on the subject of going legal, Jennifer Davidson, former GM of Universal McCann, now UM, is taking the company to court after being made redundant post-maternity leave. Davidson was allegedly told to sit tight, get married and have babies after she missed a promotion. So, Bob, on the first story, do you have a non-compete clause in your contract?
I have to check my contract again, but yeah, I think I do, yeah.
So what do you make of the first story about Adam Boland being released from a two-day-a-week contract with 7?
Look, I think he's been wanting to get out of there for a while, to be honest with you. But he's been hugely successful for 7 with Sunrise and the morning show as well. So you can understand why they wouldn't want to lose him. But again, I guess, you know, he probably feels he's done everything he can at the 7 network. So he wants to go off and do other things. And I imagine he's under, you know, oh, well, a lot of people would like to work with him. So I can understand how he feels. Equally, I can understand why 7 would say, well, you can't just go off.
Yes. Yeah. I'm relatively new to the market, and it seems to me that in the few months I've been here, there have been many, many sort of trials. Is Australia's media industry becoming increasingly litigious?
Look, this is all new. Right. I mean, I don't think there's been a case as sort of, you know, as big as the Warburton case for some time. So it's not common, I must confess. Watch his space. Who knows what's going to happen? But look, I think, to be honest, I'm not sure how seriously everybody takes it. It's sort of it's good news stories, I guess. But at the end of the day, I guess, you know, 7 naturally want to sort of stop Warburton, you know, from going to 10 for as long as they possibly can. And the same way that they're trying to stop Boland from going, you know, they want to protect their assets and et cetera as much as they can, et cetera. So you can understand why it's happening. But look, I don't see that it's going to be something that's going to be happening on a regular basis.
It's not a trend.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Suing everyone else.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe there's a few lawyers queuing up to sort of say they should, but it's not something that's happened traditionally in the past.
Yes, okay. And on the Jennifer Davidson case, what do you make of that? The fact that she claims she was dismissed.
Are we allowed to talk about it?
After promotion.
It sounds extraordinary if that was said to her. Certainly wouldn't have that sort of conversation with anyone at Starcom.
Yeah, and in the same instance, McCann Erickson, there was an email that sent out that said that non-permanent staff non-full-time staff were not desirable. And I just that surprised me. I mean, I was in Melbourne recently at a very good creative agency, and the chief executive didn't even know where his creative director was, didn't know where various people were. The implication being that a good company, a good successful company, is flexible. Mm. People can work when they need to work, as long as they get the job done and get it done very well. And it seems to me that increasingly a good business is a flexible, nimble business. And I just wonder what's the setup like at Starcom, Bob? Yeah. I mean, obviously people get into work at a certain time and leave a certain time. But so it's, how is Starcom becoming sort of more flexible business?
Well, I think that's really important because Starcom, certainly my attitude is as long as the work gets done, you can do it where you like and when you like, to be honest with you. I mean, as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing as far as a client service is concerned, that's fine. And we are being more flexible. I think you've got more working mothers in the workforce these days than you've ever had before. And they still, you know, they've got a huge contribution to make to the business. So you want to be as adaptable as you possibly can. But you also want to create an environment where people feel that they can, you know, be flexible in their working hours and that. And technology allows you to do that more and more these days. So you don't necessarily have to be in the office 5 days a week to do your job. Equally, I mean, what I always say about our industry is it's very much a people industry as well. So, in fact, sitting at your desk all day and not actually getting out and meeting people and seeing what's going on in the world means you're not doing your job properly as well. So we encourage people to get out and be away from the office.
Yeah.
But I think you have to create a more flexible work environment in that sense. So we certainly encourage people to work in, I guess, an environment that suits them. And if working from home occasionally is something that suits them, then we're more than happy for that to be the case as well.
Yeah. On another story that I covered recently, it's about a youth development program that Ogilvy were running, which I thought was interesting. It's all very laudable.
Yeah.
But someone pointed out, in fact, it's a recruiter I was speaking to recently, that the industry is too youth obsessed. And it's fair enough. It's great to have youth development schemes. But what about perhaps older creatives or sort of the older generation in media agencies? How are they looked after? I'm not suggesting sort of bowling nights out or whatever, but are there schemes in place to make sure you keep talent that is perhaps isn't the 26-year-old that's just on the agency?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. We've got a very active social club at Starcom as well. And, you know, the world has changed. The sort of things that used to get people, you know, of my generation excited was, you know, free drinks or something on the Friday and you were very happy. So nowadays, though, the youngsters, if you like, they don't necessarily want to hang about in the office on the Friday night with everyone from work. They want to go out. And in fact, they want their social activities to be more sort of based around keeping fit and joining gyms and doing things like that. So we actually provide all of that as well, the opportunity to do those sort of things. So there's occasionally that difference between older and younger, et cetera. But the way we do things again at Starcom is sitting down one-on-one with people and saying, what's important to you? What do you want to do? And how are we going to keep you happy in that sense? So, but some of the other things that we've initiated at Starcom is that we have sleep-in Mondays. So every Friday, we sort of have a get-together and we toss the coin and or do, you know, hands on heads and God knows what. And the winner has the opportunity of sleeping in on Monday morning. Doesn't have to come in until 12 o'clock. And we've also now started that the last Friday of every month, you go home at 2 o'clock. So tomorrow, everyone can rush home at 2 to go and watch the Royal Wedding. And so it's good. But things like that really sort of, I think, just create a good feeling. Mm. It doesn't really cost the company anything, but they actually feel that the staff feel that they're getting something out of it as well. And those sort of ideas have come back from having discussions with our staff and what's important to them. So I think, you know, you do end up being very adaptable in creating those opportunities, which, as I say, you know, a bit of fun.
Yes. So. Yeah, no, it's sorry. But
no, I was going to say it would be good if we had a nice sleep in on a Monday.
Yeah,
wouldn't it
be nice?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm the one always tossing the coin and never getting the day off, so I feel really bad about that.
That's not fair.
Yeah, but then most people say, yeah, I'm never there anyway. So
yeah, I mean, I do wonder about these schemes. Whether there's one at Leo Burnett called Mission 6:30 that Tob Sanson was telling me about. Sounds interesting. That a
they
bell
have to be in by 6:30.
No, yeah. when it's 6:30 p.m., a bell is rung.
Yeah.
To make everyone aware that actually, if you haven't got work to do, if you haven't finished
get out.
Get out.
That's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? That you've got to ring a bell to tell people to go home. Look, I think it is. Those. I mean, I think the world is changing where, you know, I think all companies recognise the fact that you don't want your staff staying back late all night. There should be no reason why people have to stay back late every evening. So we certainly encourage people to get that balance right. And, you know, there's a discipline in how you manage your day and, you know, clients, you know, being aware that you're going to finish at a certain time and what have you. And in most instances, clients are very understanding when you say that, you know, you've got to leave the office at a certain time, you're not going to get something complete. But the fact is, you know, you do what you've got to do. And so, you know, you can manage your day and be able to, you know, leave at a reasonable time. And that's very much that should be encouraged. You know, staying back late, you stay back when you know you've got work to do and you've got certain projects that you've got to finish, but it's not the norm.
Yeah, so I was saying that with the introduction of Mission 630, it makes people more productivity aware. Yeah. They know that really they should have done their job.
Well, do you know, the truth is, I think people get to the stage where, you know, you get people saying, well, look, I know I'm going to be staying back late. So it almost becomes a mindset that during the day, you don't necessarily work as hard because you think, I'm going to stay back anyway, so it doesn't matter. Mm. I think you've got, as I say, you've got to start changing that sort of whole sort of philosophy and that whole feeling that why do you want to stay back? If you want to, that's fine, but it's certainly not what we expect our staff to do. So we encourage people to get out and do the right thing. And as I say, you know, part of the sort of discussion we have with our staff is, you know, this should be a social industry still. And part of what we do is getting out, meeting people, talking to people, and certainly building relationships up. And if you're stuck at your desk all day, you're not going to be able to do that. So,
okay, next, feeling peckish, how about a 1 kilogram burrito?
With more than 94.5 million active users globally, eBay is the world's largest online marketplace. To make the most of your advertising dollar, visit advertise.ebay.com.au. This week, Mexican restaurant chain Mad Mex has launched a campaign challenging customers to eat a 1 kilogram burrito. The chain is offering a special limited edition t-shirt to anyone that can finish the mammoth meal, a move that comes only a short time after KFC's highly unhealthy menu addition, the Double. Bob, is this a clever marketing ploy or an obesity epidemic waiting to happen?
Yeah, that second one, I reckon.
Would you eat a 1 kilogram burrito?
Look, I mean, I'm not really into fast food that much anyway, but it sounds revolting, doesn't it? But there will be plenty of people out there, I'm sure, prepared to take the challenge on. And it's all a bit of fun, really, isn't it?
Someone was telling me when they launched the Double that they saw there was like a line down the road and around the corner outside of KFC with people queuing up to get their hands on that. So,
Look, there will always be people who think they can take these things on. And, you know, you sort of think, how many times can these companies rehash this sort of idea? They do, and it still seems to be, you know, successful at the time. But, gosh, the thought of eating something that big doesn't really sort of do anything for me. But maybe, you know, the T-shirts are good.
But it seems that, do you think that perhaps courting controversy as KFC has done with success is a trend?
But I wouldn't thought they wanted to, you know, the whole health debate. I mean, people, you know, with all due respect, you know, KFC, great product, but it's one of those things that I think, you know, these days it's about talking about the healthy side of, you know, fast food eating, and I don't know if you're doing yourself any favors by highlighting the fact that eating, you know, for the sake of eating is a good thing, you know, in that sense. But look, I think good luck to anyone who actually succeeds in doing it. We're sort of see them on the emergency ward in
is that where you're headed for lunch, Robin?
Absolutely, I wouldn't mind giving it a go.
You look like you could probably do with it.
I think there's one on Oxford Street. We could swing past on the way back to the office if you like.
I mean, the portions are incredible. It's double the filling that's going into this burrito. And the idea is quite cute, I suppose, that taking on a 1 kilogram burrito has been compared to the Battle of Puebla when Mexico defeated France in 1862.
Do you think the average person eating that would really care about that particular battle?
Yeah, well, no, but it's just it's time with Cinco de Mayo, which is a Mexican
It sounds very impressive, doesn't it? Yeah, it's that the justification why you've just gorged out on something huge that you're just, you know, it's all about history.
Yes, yeah. But I do wonder that, as I noted, despite controversy, you're seeing results.
Yeah.
So, I mean, perhaps would McDonald's, I mean, that's a... Do you think they'll start
like
doing
a 1 kilogram burger from McDonald's?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, look, it's all waves, isn't it? I mean, you know, the reality is, you know, they're obviously getting a lot of attention at the moment. It's what they're going to do post this. And I think, you know, these are nice little things to do, but it's more tactical rather than long-term planning and growing the business, I would have thought. But there you go.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Next, the Royal Wedding media frenzy takes its first casualty. You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, go to mumbrella.com.au. You can't pick up a newspaper or turn on the TV this week without being bombarded with news of the royal wedding. And the biggest story to surface this week is the axing of the Chasers royal wedding commentary. The ABC was forced to pull the commentary at the 11th hour after a ruling from the Office of the Royal Family, which places a ban on the use of the material for the purposes of satire or comedy. Now, Bob, I'm fairly new to the country. I'm not that familiar with the work of the Chaser, but what are your thoughts on this? The Royal Family, have they had a sense of humour failure?
Yeah, I think they probably have, haven't they? I mean, God, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? And I think I find it amazing that they really are taking it that seriously, that you're not allowed to have a bit of a laugh. I think as someone from the Chaser was saying the other day, you know, when you consider all the comments that Prince Philip has made over the years, et cetera, and that family as a whole, you know, they are a bit of a...
That's right. I mean, the world has been laughing at the royal family for centuries. Yeah. I'm not sure why all of a sudden that they can't take
exactly. Joke. And I'm sure the Chaser would do it with, you know, great, you know, care and attention and et cetera. But, I mean, you know, as they always do, it's silly. The truth is, people would have accepted it for what it is. If you're listening to the Chaser, then you know that that's what they're going to do. And to be honest, I think, you know, as wonderful as the royal wedding is, we also need a bit of, you know, put it in perspective and have a bit of a laugh with it as well. So,
Do you think that the banning of the Chasers will affect any other sorts of coverage? As in, do you think that the tone of other coverage will be deliberately more perhaps serious?
Well,
or
I think Channel 9 have got Dame Edna, haven't they? Sort of
that's right.
As part of their commentary team. So maybe, you know, she should be careful with what she says or she might, you know, be taken off somewhere.
Will you be watching the wedding?
Well, we're finishing work at 2 o'clock tomorrow, so we'll be... Yeah, look, I'm sure I'll watch bits of it.
Yeah.
You can't really miss it unless if you're watching TV tomorrow.
Well, that's what
you?
I was saying
it's
to Robin. Even this
place.
Morning, yeah. I got up and put the TV on and the TV was on ABC News 24 and then I flicked it over to 7 thinking, oh, I'll just see what's on Sunrise. And it was just the wedding. And then I went over to Channel 9 and Lisa Wilkinson was having this ridiculous conversation about how there was 3 people in the wedding and one of them was Princess Diana and she was drawing.
It is amazing. I mean, what makes me laugh at the moment is it seems that the UK are being very cynical about the whole thing. And yet here in Australia and in the US as well, they're going completely mad about it. And it does make you watch the Today Show or Sunrise and they kind of, you know, half taking the piss out of it. But you think, well, if it's that bad, why did you send everybody over there to cover it? And God knows why. Anyway,
Sunrise,
you know,
even taking the cash cow, haven't they?
Yeah, so. It's frightening, isn't it? Yeah. But look, it's a big event, isn't it? You know, she seems quite nice, doesn't she? So, and he always comes over as a reasonable sort of guy, but... just don't take the mick out of them, I guess. The commentary will be very serious.
What's the sort of impact has it had on media in terms of the sort of revenue do you think media stations will generate on the back of the wedding?
Look, I don't think advertisers are queuing up to get into the royal wedding.
Why is
I
that?
Think, look, I think it's one of those things that people will watch it because it's on. As I say, there's nothing, you know. There's nothing else on. It's quite interesting, actually. You talk about the Chaser thing. Channel 10 are also sort of taking a slightly light-hearted look at it as well. They've got Fitzy and what have you over there from Nova. Mm. So, it'll be interesting to see how they sort of commentate on it as well. But, look, in this country, I don't think there's been a huge sort of...
hasn't been a glut of bookings, advertisers
to
be associated with it. Well, have you seen any sort of... Are you doing any sort of tactical campaigns around the wedding that you can talk about?
We're not, no.
Yeah, do you expect that sort of thing to happen?
I guess there could be. I don't know, again, in this country, how really bothered people are by it and how impactful. Sort of, you know, again, if you've got to be careful by what you say and do around it, then, you know, the idea of doing some tactical stuff is usually that you have a bit of a laugh. So who knows?
Next, Channel 9, back in the game.
To advertise with one of the top 10 most loved brands in Australia, visit advertise.ebay.com.au. Well, the ratings are yet to return post-Easter, but Channel 9's come out of the gates early with the premiere of the Andrew Denton-produced show AFP. The first airing pulled in a decent 1.2 million viewers for Nine, who's also announced this week that it's picked up the rights to the Kerry Packer-focused cricket drama. Now, gentlemen, did you watch AFP?
No. Not me, I'm afraid.
No. But I watched a little clip of it on Mumbrella this morning. So, but look, it looks fine, but it's, to be honest, it doesn't seem to be anything, you know, groundbreaking. It's very similar to sort of the Recruits or, you know, Border Security, that type of program. Interesting topic, though. I mean, you know, as they say, no one's ever followed the feds before, so.
And do you think that Andrew Denton being involved and his production company being involved gives it a sort of sense of gravity that those other shows don't have?
Yeah, look, do the public know it's an Andrew Denton show? I'm not sure, but I think, you know, Denton's a great producer. You know, he puts a lot of thought behind what he does, so that in that sense, it's great. But look, it's interesting. 1.2 is a great number these days, so Nine would certainly be very happy with that, so...
Definitely.
Interesting to see how it continues going.
We've touched on this before, Bob, but yeah, interested in your point of view. So post Easter,
yeah.
How do you see the ratings battle shaping up? And from what you've seen, we've had plenty of clips, promos sent in from Seven, from Nine, from Ten about their upcoming programming season. Mm-hmm. What do you make of what's on offer?
Look, it'll be interesting. I think Nine believe that most of their, you know, strong stuff will come in after June, from June onwards. Obviously, we've got MasterChef starting on Sunday. So Ten will certainly be hoping that that kicks in and does everything that it's done for them in the past. And to be honest, absolutely no reason why that won't be the case. So look, there was no doubt Seven, as we all know, have got off to a fantastic start this year. You know, and they've got, you know, some strong programming to continue to come for the rest of the year and that as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think, you know, 10 again bring in a lot of, you know, strong programs for the back half of the year. So I think, you know, the gap will close between the others and 7, but I think 7 will still continue to do well. And I think it'll be interesting to see how some of the new stuff online goes.
So it's not over yet. The year isn't 7.
No, look, I think certainly, you know, it's interesting because last year 7 was slow coming out of the block. I think they acknowledged that they sort of, you know, probably held back a lot of their big hits, you know, for too long. And the truth is, I think probably Channel 9 did that this year. So, you know, they have got a lot of making up to do. And for Channel 10, you know, they've missed that big sort of event program besides, you know, Biggest Loser, which is still doing okay demographically in this first quarter. But, you know, and they will certainly be hoping that MasterChef, you know, dusts the numbers that you know, everybody expects it to do. So.
Yeah. And from your chats with clients, what have they been saying? What have advertisers been saying about the sort of variable performance of 7, 9 and 10 so far?
Look, I think, again, you know, people have been surprised by the fact that 7 have been so far ahead. But I think, you know, I think to a certain degree, there's a degree of, you know, that's... The reality is the way you're buying TV these days is very much around environment and programming.
Yeah.
And I guess more and more people are looking at particular programs, making sure that, you know, demographically, contextually, they're the right fit, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, what you've been seeing this year, though, is obviously the impact of the digital channels really sort of, you know, settling in, etc., etc. So, you know, we are finding that just generally, you know, the way we're monitoring campaigns these days, you know, our buyers are spending more time on a weekly basis monitoring the buyers because there is more fluctuation in ratings now than there's ever been. So it's very time consuming in that sense and that as well. But as I say, you know, people buy programs as opposed to networks per se.
Next, Fairfax makes headlines.
Fairfax has been making headlines this past week. Firstly, with the Easter miracle, as they concede autoplay video is actually annoying. Secondly, the publisher has controversially merged its TV guides from the Monday edition of the Sydney Morning Herald and the Sun Herald. The move has newsagents furious. So on the second part, Bob, what are your thoughts on this, on the TV guide issue?
I'd like to read the guide on the Monday. I've got used to sort of, you know, reading that, but I think... I don't know how relevant TV guides are these days to people. There's plenty of other ways of finding out what, you know, what's on, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, Fairfax believe that they can get more efficiencies out of combining, you know, the two, et cetera. So, yeah, I don't know if it's really, you know, earth-shattering news or not, to be honest with you.
What do you read the guide for, just to sort of see what programs are
the guide, from our point of view, is sometimes it has some interesting, you know, background information about, you know, certain programs and what's happening. But as far as sort of, you know, schedules are concerned, I very rarely look at the sort of, you know, the program lineups these days. Mm-hmm. So
having spoken to head of the News Agents Association of New South Wales, he was saying that, yeah, he understands it makes perfect commercial sense to combine the two guides.
Yeah.
Obviously, competing in the digital age versus electronic guides, so that makes sense. But it's the logistics of it. It's the fact that news agents are being asked to help survey over a six-week period who wants the guide on a Monday, who wants it on a Sunday. And that causes them a huge headache in terms of, and also, obviously, insertion. That takes a lot of time, especially on a Sunday, their busiest day of the week. There seems to be a lot of friction also in the relationship between news agents and Fairfax.
Yeah.
News agents actually saying that they have, I'm not taking sides here, but a better relationship with news in that sense. I just wonder what you made of that.
Look, I think you can certainly understand why news agents would be a bit pissed off about it. I mean, you know, they are being asked to do additional work, if you like, and you know, they probably argue they haven't got time to sort of insert these, you know, magazines into papers. I thought it was quite amusing the comment that the Sun Herald would be buggered without the TV Guide in it, or whatever. But
yes, he's saying it's unsaleable without a TV Guide.
That's a big statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
But look, I can perfectly understand why the news agents are saying that, and it'll be interesting to see just what impact it does have on sales, I guess, moving forward. If it has a major impact, then I imagine you'll see that changing.
Yes, a quote that I didn't put in the story, I didn't think I needed it, but a news agent was saying that news would be absolutely delighted. This is the best piece of news that they've heard in a long time.
Yeah.
And they expect sales of their newspapers to spike as a result. Do you expect to see that?
I don't know. I mean, again, it comes down to how important is the TV Guide to people. Now, you know, for a certain generation, I think the TV Guide is still something that's important to them.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I want to hark back to my parents. I think, you know, my mother still buys a Sunday paper so she can get her TV Guide. But I don't think, you know, I honestly don't think it's going to make or break it to that extent. So,
I mean, in terms of the reading habits of Sunday readers, news agent also saying that from his experience talking to customers, they read a Sunday paper for three reasons. First is the TV Guide.
Yeah.
Second is for comics. And third is for sport.
Yeah.
I just wonder, does that chime with any of your sort of reader surveys on
Yeah, look, I mean, certainly they are important things. I mean, sport particularly obviously is important for Sunday papers, etc. But look, I guess, I don't know. I think, you know, watch this space and see what impact it has. I'm not a big Sunday newspaper reader, so it's not really going to change my opinion. And look, maybe it will. I mean, if you've got to choose between the two and you're getting a TV Guide in one and you're not necessarily getting one in another, then it might swap you. But, I mean, you can still have that guide. You just actually got to ask for it. And I think the idea is, again, Fairfax is saying that they're going to make the guide, you know, more, you know, bigger and better and more sort of, you know, entertaining for readers. So, again, I guess as long as the content within that is going to be something that you know, buyers want, and they're going to ask for it, then again, that's will be worthwhile.
Okay, quick word on autoplay. Mm. Any views on that? Fairfax has obviously conceded that the autoplay video is annoying.
Yeah, I would
users.
Agree.
Yeah. So what's Starcom's take on it?
We've been doing, you know, a number of different sort of tests and surveys to see what sort of formats are effective and what sort of consumers want. I think, you know, the biggest challenge for video online at the moment is finding a format that consumers are comfortable with. And, you know, we all know that more and more people are watching video online. The challenge for the industry and us all is actually finding a commercial model which is effective. So I think, you know, that's still to be resolved. One of the things could well be actually making the creative more, you know, smarter and more desirable for people to actually, you know, download and watch, et cetera, as well. So I think there's a lot of sort of challenges still to be had. And, you know, it's probably about the publishers and creative agencies and media agencies working together to sort of create content that is going to be more desirable, as I say.
Okay. I mean, in that story that Tim wrote, he mentioned also that he quoted someone from Fairfax saying that new formats would be on the horizon. They didn't mention what those would be. I just wonder, I mean, Starcom's strong in the digital sphere. Any hints at the future of engaging, and you mentioned creative is important, but engaging new online advertising formats that are coming up?
Look, I think, you know, there's a lot of different things. We've done some stuff recently, which Fairfax actually adopted, where, you know, people actually have the opportunity of choosing the ad that they want to watch.
Yeah.
So, again, it's given, if you like, control back to consumers as to what they want to see. So, you know, you have a choice of 3 or 4 different commercials, and you say, well, I want to watch this. And as I say, you know, therefore it becomes more desirable. But I think, you know, a major thing is going to come around the sort of the type of content within those ads and how you can make that much more desirable. Because the reality is that, you know, for people to be engaged and want to be engaged online, you've got to talk to them in a very different way. So, you know, the traditional formats are not something people want to see. So I think, you know, there's a lot of testing, a lot of learning, which is going to continue to go on to find a model which is really, you know, best suited to online.
Next, Mumbrella's top 30 creative agencies.
This week we announced the list of Mumbrella's top 30 creative agencies. Now, Robin, I know this is something you've been busily working on. Can you tell us about the process that you've gone through so far?
Yeah, the process that we went through, obviously we drew up a long list of agencies, a very long list, in fact, and we ran this past our panel of 12 clients, former clients, recruiters and headhunters. I know there's some surprises, indeed. Perhaps I shouldn't name names, but some people were surprised at the inclusion of the likes of Innotion, Oddfellows, Publicist Mojo Melbourne. And some people were very surprised and offended by omissions, notably Euro RSCG, which they feel was hard done by. So what comes next? I've sent out a questionnaire to our panel for the final 30. And they will gauge the agencies on a variety of criteria, creativity, effectiveness, impact on the industry, and so on. And indeed, next week, Monday, an email blast will go out to our readers, 23,000 readers, who will be asked to rate our top 30 on a variety of criteria. So look out for that. So in essence, what we're trying to ask is the question, what defines a great creative agency? Bob, obviously you're in the media side of things, but you obviously know a lot about creative agencies. You have a lot to do with creative agencies. So in your view, what defines a really great creative agency?
I think it is an interesting point that there's a lot of debate between creative and media agencies these days. And obviously, there was a big debate that the Media Awards, a creative agency won the top sort of, you know, awards, if you like. I think the reality is a good creative agency these days is someone who stays true to what their core business is, and that is creating great work for their clients. And that's going to come, again, from greater, you know, understanding, I think, of the consumers and how best to reach them and talk to them and what's important to them from a brand perspective, et cetera, et cetera.
Did it rankle slightly, Bob, that a creative agency won the sort of, was the most awarded media agency, as it were?
Well, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's, again, who comes up with the idea at the end of the day? And I think, you know, again, the way we work is it's really, I guess, unimportant who comes up with the idea as such, where the idea comes from, as long as it's doing the right thing for the client, et cetera. It is interesting. I think probably the creative agencies probably made more of it than some of the media agencies. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost like the Sydney-Melbourne divide, where, you know, Melbourne are more obsessed with the competition than Sydney is, and probably creative agencies are more obsessed with trying to convince everyone that they can do everything as well.
Yeah.
I think the truth is that, you know, quite honestly, and certainly from a client's perspective, they want creative agencies and media agencies to work side by side. And as I say, I think it's about how working side by side you actually come up with the best results for, you know, the particular client. And, you know, I'd hope that we would be open to any discussion from a creative agency talking about our media strategy as they would to us talking about their creative strategy as well.
Creative agencies like to talk a lot, don't they, about the big ideas. And a section that we're looking at in our top 30 is the impact on the industry. So various ways you can look at this, but obviously big ideas such as Earth Hour, that's a big idea that transcended advertising.
Which Starcom were involved with as well.
Right, yes.
So we're the media agency for that. So we worked alongside Leo's in creating than idea.
Yeah. So obviously big ideas aren't the exclusive realm of creative agencies.
No, absolutely.
How at Starcom, perhaps, are you encouraging people from account people to media buyers to planners to senior management to be part of that idea generation process?
Well, look, I think, yeah, that's a great point. The reality is a great idea can come from anywhere. So the way we work is very much that everyone is involved in that strategic development. So it doesn't have to be the domain of the strategist to come up with the big idea. We encourage our investors, our business managers, the media to be involved at the beginning and to come up with the idea. So really, as I say, it's bringing together all the relevant parties and actually, giving everyone the opportunity to participate in that. So I think that's the thing these days. You can't be precious about where the idea comes from. And I think the truth is that, one of the things these days is there's plenty of ideas. It's about finding the right space to put those ideas in there as well.
Yeah.
And as I say, I think, when we sit down, our process is collaborative. So we will, as I say, work alongside our creative partners. We work alongside our media partners to ensure that we come up with an idea that's going to be the best fit.
Yeah, I remember in Europe, the way that the Levi's client used to brief agencies jointly. Mm. So it'd have...
I think that's absolutely right. And most clients, I think you'll find these days, do that.
Yes.
And it makes perfect sense.
So they're increasingly willing to toss the ball to the creative agency and say, you guys, or indeed the PR agency, and say, come on, what have you got? What sort of ideas can you generate? It's not just the realm of the creative agency.
No, absolutely. I think, more and more. I think, the reality is that it's a common brief which is, given to all the agency partners. And I think, there has to be a clear understanding of what your particular role is, but you should all contribute to actually bringing the idea to life. So
that's all we have time for today. Thanks to Starcom Media Vest, Bob Googe, and my co-host, Brooke Hemphill. I'm Robin Hicks. Until next week, goodbye.